welcome to episode 14 of Super Entertainment Presents the Television Crossover Universe on the Grand Geek Nolan Network, coming to you from Castle Wolfenstein, hosted by the TVCU crew. Joining me in the studio, Studio A, is Ivan Schabowski, convention panelist and lover of cheese, and via Skype in Studio B is James Boyachuk, CEO of 18th Wall Productions, and in Studio C is Chris Nigro, author and founder of Wild Hunt Press, and I am Robert Ironski Jr., author of the Horror Crossover Encyclopedia. We are the TVCU crew. The TVCU crew are a team of crossovers who devote way too much of their time to connecting the dots to official crossovers and Easter eggs in order to demonstrate a shared fictional reality that we call the Television Crossover Universe. And I should also say, I was speaking to a therapist the other day, just casually, and he said that it sounded like my hobby was a mental disorder. So you guys must all have that same mental disorder. So on that note, welcome, guys.
Well, that's awkward. I mean, nobody's telling him that golf is a mental disorder, right?
Right. Well, he's like seeing all the different patterns within fiction and connecting those dots. And
okay, well, sure. If it's like in A Beautiful Mind or something.
Well, here's the thing. Like, when I try to describe what I do to, people who aren't into crossovers, they really don't get it. They don't understand what a crossover is sometimes. They heard them mention another show on their show. Is that a crossover? I'm like, were they watching it on TV? Yeah, then that's not a crossover.
I had somebody ask me 2 weeks ago what a crossover is. And I said, do you remember those cartoons when Scooby-Doo would meet Batman? They go, yeah, that's a crossover. I go, oh, okay.
Detective Munch is usually my go-to for explaining crossovers. Because some people think, like, if it's just the same actor appearing on different shows as different characters, those shows are connected, and like, no!
Oh, yeah, like that crossover between Star Trek The Next Generation and The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So let's get to our shameless plugging. Let's see. James, we'll start with you this time.
Awesome. Well, in just a few days, we're going to be releasing Hannah Lakoff's The Speckled Band. And this isn't the latest. This is our March release in The Science of Detection, our 12-part Sherlock Holmes series. This one's a bit different in that Sherlock Holmes only appears really at the end. This is a gothic horror novel based around everything that happened in the Speckled Band right before Sherlock Holmes arrived. So we have Grimsby Roylott being a monster to his daughters, and we have all of the tragedy that happened to them between India and the arrival of Sherlock Holmes. So I guess if someone really wanted to push this to certain literary cloud, we'd call it feminist gothic horror. But since we're probably far from the fields of literary criticism, we can just call it gothic horror. And for our listeners, remember that Hannah Lakoff will be visiting us in just a few weeks to talk about this and her collection After the World Ended. And I would also like to say the second best podcast on iTunes, Strangeness in Space, starring Trev Simon and Sophie Aldred of Doctor Who, is about to release a fourth episode. All of you guys should check that out. It's the funniest podcast, barring Chris's puns, of course.
Of course.
James, I have to ask your opinion of something.
Your puns?
No, it's of a... Well, yeah, in a way, but it just came to mind, by the way. Would a good political term for somebody who believes that individuals should have the right to cough and hack all they want in public be feminist?
Yes.
And incidentally, Hannah Lakoff will be on episode 21. I just looked it up.
Okay, you dismissed me. You got me very hacked off.
All right.
Chris?
So, Ivan, do you have anything to plug?
Well, I've been working with Kevin Heim again, trying to do a 2016 update for the Ivan Chronology blog page, you know, because April 1st is coming.
Yes.
So that's really the only project I've been getting into.
April 1st is coming. That's another thing I have to add to my to-do list.
What, you forgot?
I forgot that I am going to be working on a Joker blog post for April 1st. Yes.
So, but since that's all I have, does that mean we have to go to Chris now?
Oh yeah, we do. Oh. Yeah, sorry, Chris.
I think I'm the one who owes the listeners the apology. But anyway, I guess if I have to plug, I am once again going to plug my character Scytharn. That is a Barzumian name, in case you didn't recognize the ethnicity. And he, I already have a story of his published by Pulp Empire in Aliens Among Us Volume 1, A Barzumian Warrior on Earth. And his second story is ready to go. And we will see as he gets involved with a street gang and basically adopts them. It'll be awesome. You got to check it out. Oh, and a bunch of Barzumian creatures get loose on Earth, too. So, yeah, there's going to be some blood and mayhem also, if you're into that.
Cool.
Sounds fun.
Okay, so what I need to talk about is crowdfunding. And I don't want this to be all gloomy and doomy, but it basically comes down to if we don't meet our crowdfunding goals, we might not be able to continue this show. Because Super Entertainment, which is basically me, is funding the show and funding my writing, and it's getting difficult to fund both and fund a 15-year-old son as well. So we really need to push for crowdfunding because I love doing the show and I love writing books and I want to do all of it. And if you love reading my books, and if you love listening to this podcast, we'd really love you go to our crowdfunding. If you check out basically anywhere I am on Facebook or any social media, you can find we have switched from GoFundMe to Patreon, which I've only just discovered about, and there are different rewards you can get for different donations. And they include at different levels, just being thanked on the show like we were before the GoFundMe. But then there's also, you can see TVCU blog posts a few days before they are posted. So that you get the spoilers. There's a reward that you can talk to the host of the show about crossovers, nerdy things, and generally shooting the breeze on Skype. Then there's getting your name mentioned at the beginning of the show for $25. And for $50, once a quarter, we'll let you shamelessly plug your product on our show, though we do have the right to deem what's appropriate for our show. So if it's something that's like illegal, for instance, we probably will not honor that.
Right. So if Chris were to write a joke book, we would not let him plug that on the show.
No, probably not, because that's for the safety of mankind.
Hey, I think if I wrote a book on jokes, it would be a very punny book.
We know.
All right. So, I think that didn't come off as gloomy and doomy, I hope not, because I want to keep it light. I really enjoyed doing the show, and I'm just asking that if you really enjoy listening to the show, and if you can help, please support the show. And if you don't have money, you can still support the show by sharing both the show, telling other people about the show, but also sharing the crowdfunding. You know, there's lots of other ways to support the show as well. You know, and keeping us a secret is not keeping us all to yourself is not supporting. So we're gonna take a break, and when we come back, we will have our guest, author M.H. Norris. Okay, we are back. James, would you like to introduce our guest, please?
It would be my pleasure. There are many ways I could introduce M.H. Norris. I could tell you the story of how I was introduced to her writing and how no one was quite sure what she was getting at. I could sing the lyrics from an ill-advised short story. I could talk about some of the famous people she will always mention that she's met. But let's take this from her official bio. M.H. Norris is a genre nomad wandering freely between crime, science fiction, fantasy, and spy-fi. Her first full-length work is Bad City Notches, which was nominated for the Pulp ARC New Pulp Awards. People who were nominated for that seem to be a bit of a theme for this show. But turning back to M.H. Norris, so to begin with, why serial killers? Because this not only appears in your nominated work, Notches, but it's also in your new work that you're, you sent us an excerpt from to promote, Midnight. So why serial killers?
Well, that's actually an interesting question. Part of it is serial killers are easier to write because, sad but true fact, the more bodies you drop in the story, the more words you have. That was sometimes an easy way to get through Notches was, all right, let's move on. Next victim, then I easily can kill a few hundred words, and that sounds morbid, but I don't understand how people can write these 100,000-word novels and only have one murder. I haven't quite figured out how they master that yet. That's why serial killers.
I can't see why they would want to write a 100,000-word novel without having more than one murder.
You got to spread the blood around. Instead of the love. Go on, M.H.
We get it. It's okay. Fine.
But, yeah, that's why. It's honestly, it's partially right now, it's a bit of a writing crutch, is it makes it easier for me to focus on the mystery without having to worry about words, is I've got so many. I can go to victimology, which is one way to find the killer. With multiple victims, that's easier. You know, it makes bigger story. You have more suspect pools. Sometimes, you know, oh, I can connect. By the way, you're getting spoilers, so just play this back when the next story comes out and think what you will. But yeah, that's why serial killers. It's fun, it's different, and it's actually what's really popular right now. A lot of people are focusing on just one or two murders, but this more multiple is what gets people's attention because, you know, Criminal Minds, that's their minimum of three because they're doing the FBI, and FBI will not consider it a serial case, or the BAU won't come until it's three murders.
Right.
So that's what's popular right now.
And Rob, I know you have some fun questions for her. Would you like to launch into those?
Yeah. Well, first of all, can I call you M?
Let's go with MH.
MH. Okay. I'd rather call you M, but that's all right.
I'm going to burst your bubble.
So please tell me about Doc Claus.
Oh, Doc Claus. My popular comment for that one is it was my first story. My first time ever being published. It came out Christmas time of 2012. It was a bittersweet story, actually. But it's actually a fun little crossover between a fictional universe I'm still trying to tinker and actually make work, and maybe it'll someday see the light of day. And
Which is about Jonas Brothers super spies. That's the elevator pitch.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
So, yes, Jonas says, if you listen, you guys did inspire those three characters. But yes, so it was between them and Doc Savage. What's 1930s?
Right.
1930s Paul. James actually shoved the project my way. He's like, hey, this sounds like something fun. You can put the Dreamer Boys, which with Doc Savage. I'm like, who is Doc Savage? And after he
And this is how I introduced her to Philip Jose Farmer's Doc Savage, His Apocalyptic Life. So I'm sorry, Phil. This is what came of your biography.
From the Jonas Brothers. I know some people would be really upset about that.
They'll be even more upset
because you actually find out that after the previous Santa Claus died, Doc Savage was anointed the current Santa Claus. This was actually part of the whole anthology's theme.
Yep,
Doc Savage becomes.
Yeah,
he remembers that detail.
I saw the cover to it, and I was hoping that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Doc Savage is Santa. Myself, when I saw that, yeah.
And, of course, there are also other crossover references in this story. Don't tell me I remember your own story better.
My own story. I have not looked at this story in over a year because it honestly makes me cringe.
There is a reference to the criminal being caught by a psychic investigator in Santa Barbara, California.
Oh, that's right. I did make a psych reference. That was when I was just getting into psych was when I wrote this. So, yes, I did manage to throw a shameless psych plug in there. I managed to throw a pineapple in the Notches, once again, just to mention psych. I feel like I'm going to end up having pineapples in all my stories, just as a little nod to what helped get me into murder mysteries, to be honest. There's like a whole band. There's the Easter Bunny, and there's this whole hilarious...
And I would like to say, in her defense, she did not create these characters.
I did not create these characters. The Easter Bunny is mentioned, and there's this hilarious sequence, and I still kind of find it funny. between Angie and the Easter Bunny, because he was supposed to be flirtatious, and so he actually hits on her, and she's so creeped out. And to me, it was, I thought the idea of it, I was like, okay, I have to write this in.
Well, I agree, an anthropomorphic 6-foot-tall rabbit would be creepy if it hit on me, I must.
But yeah, that was the way the character was put. He was flirting, and I was like, oh, that's so creepy, but I have to use it.
With those whiskers and those teeth. Because
I think it was supposed to include all of them, and so some of them maybe got like 2 lines of dialogue just to meet the quota.
Yeah, right.
And that was the Easter Bunny's appearance, was hitting on Angie, and then he wandered off, and I don't think we ever saw him again.
Cross-species flirtations, definitely creepy.
So I hear there's lyrics to the Doc Claus theme.
There are. I actually, in my fictional universe, these boys are spies by night, and they're a band by day, so I end up writing all their lyrics. And there is a song in Doc Claus, and there's a couple that I've written that are going to make it into their universe whenever I quite figure out how to make them work. I am not singing them.
Okay.
So you guys are all out of luck. James is giving me puppy dog eyes right now. No. Actually, there is no tune to it. It is actually loosely inspired off of a Jonas Brothers Christmas song. That's kind of where I helped get me like a rhythm of sorts to be able to write the lyrics. Other times it kind of, a not tune, but a rhythm hits in my head, and that's how I write other ones. Sometimes it takes me a couple days to come up with their lyrics, and sometimes in the space of a half hour, I've got at least a chorus for them for a story.
Nice. So I want to switch to Bad City Notches. I did not get to read that, unfortunately. I'm having some technical difficulties right now, but it is on my list of books to grab and read. But for our listeners and for me, can you tell us a little bit about it?
This was actually a, for lack of a better term, a happy accident. I actually was not looking to write a book when I asked about this project. I was actually coming off a really bad writer's burnout and was looking for a short story, just something to get back on my feet and start writing again. And I talked to Prosy, and I was like, okay, this project sounds fun. Can I write a short story for it? And Nate came back to me and said, you want to write a 30,000-word novella? And I was like, sure. I didn't want to think that one through. Trying to write 30,000 words, having to research, write, rewrite, edit, have James yell at me, edit again.
Within the course of 90 days.
In about 90 days.
Geez. A full book in 90 days.
And, yeah, there was an almost nervous breakdown at the end of that process. But it is a murder mystery. It features a cop, Deidre. She's a third-generation cop in this town that's known as Badge City because its police force is so strong. Mm-hmm. And these girls start turning up dead. There ends up being 7 of them. And they're the age of her daughter. And to me, that was a personal touch. I was like, let's bring it close to home. So these are her daughter's age. She knows a lot of them. They're actually in the same rec league together. And so she's freaked out because technically her daughter's in the victim pool. She could be one of the next victims because she fits all the qualifications. So it's a case where she's trying to solve it. And it's, I think, takes place in about 3 days, less than 72 hours.
Yes.
It's pretty rapid fire. She doesn't get much sleep. And at the end of it, she's about ready to pull out her hair. And I'll have to say with Badge City that this climax is probably one of my favorite things I've ever written. Actually, a lot of people think James came up with the idea. No, that no. was all me.
It is absolutely twisted, and it's all from her dark mind.
Like, some special twisted part came out and wrote this, and I was so proud of it. And I sent it to James. I was like, James, look at this climax. I was so proud of it. So when you get to the reveal of who it is, that is one of my favorite things I've ever written.
So I'm really fascinated with serial killers. So I'm really looking forward to reading some stories, because a little known secret about my past is I used to work for Army CID, and working on serial killer cases was part of my job. So it was a very fascinating time in my life.
Yeah, to me, fascinating, partially because I've watched so many TV shows, and they tend to fixate on serial killers.
Right.
And then also when doing research for Badge City, I was sitting there, you know, reading about the Zodiac, and all sorts of ones. And there's actually that movie, Robert Downey Jr., I ended up watching. Just doing research on different killers and how the investigation went, how the killer went. I actually ended up binge watching all of Criminal Minds while I was writing this book, just to get them to help me figure out how you investigate a murder. And there's actually a bit that I wouldn't have been able to write without Criminal Minds, because they actually gave advice to a character, mm-hmm. and I took it and wrote it in.
Nice.
Shamelessly. Thank you.
Or crossovers, though.
Oh, sorry.
No, go for it.
If I may say, MH, I really loved how you tackled the idea of a serial killer, and I really liked your character of Dr. Rosella Tassoni. I did pronounce her last name correct, right? I hope so. And I like the subject because, if I may boast, I also had a story about a serial killer published in Slaughterhouse, the Serial Killer Edition, Volume 1 by Siren's Call Publications. So you know I'm fascinated in the subject. And I basically liked your introduction of the concept of forensic mythology. I thought maybe you could explain that to us a bit, because it's very cool.
I'm actually curious.
Actually, just for clarification, Chris has jumped ahead, and we're now talking about Midnight, the first part of all.
Okay. Well, you had to bring up the subject of serial killers. Sorry.
No, you're fine. We can stick with this now. But
okay,
this
yeah,
is Midnight, the first volume of All the Petty Myths, her new series that will be starting to come out this summer.
But forensic mythology was kind of something James and I have been talking about doing this probably not too long before I actually got to write Notches. And then it got put on the back burner for that insane 90 days. And we started coming back to it. The idea of, hey, this is a fun idea. Let's do an anthology. This actually is going to be kind of a backdoor pilot to a series, but it's going to be in an anthology. So there are going to be a bunch of other writers. And I'm going to end up making James do some shameless plugging later, because I'm actually really excited about these stories. They're fun, and the author should be proud of their work. But going back to Midnight specifically, I snuck in most of my crossovers for this story so far are actually in the bit I sent you guys. You guys got the first two scenes. But the idea of forensic mythology is myths have been here since as long as people have. We tell stories. They get passed down, and some of these older ones become myths. You know, you've got the Greek gods, the Roman gods. You've got Beowulf is technically, you know, myths. All these stories, and they become infamous. Bloody Mary, let's go to more violent ones. Bloody Mary, in the case of Midnight, I'll actually give it away. We're actually playing the Midnight game, which was something I discovered when I was looking for a good myth to base the story on. But forensic
internet folklore at its finest.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is internet folklore at its finest. It's actually has pagan roots. It was apparently a ritual meant to, you know, remind rule breakers that that's not a good idea. And to me, in its modern form, it's a complete waste of 3 hours and 33 minutes of your time.
Yeah. You have to wander around in the darkness with a candle waiting for the Midnight Man to get you.
And there's salt involved, too. I think someone watched one too many episodes of Supernatural. I love the show, but it's like, why would you do this? And I actually say it so many times in the story that as I'm writing this right now, I keep saying, why would someone play this game? I don't understand.
But crossovers.
Crossovers. Straight off, there's a mention we go to Bones. Temperance Brennan, her latest book makes a cameo in the first scene. And the second scene, after you see Supernatural in the bookcase, you see American Duos. There's my nod to Psych, season 2, episode 1. And she actually mentioned, did I remember to TiVo it? Because, of course, when you're wandering around a crime scene, you're going to wonder if you remember to TiVo American Duos.
Right.
I like to try to make sure I give her some human moments, because with her, as I'm developing Rosella, I've noticed that, you know, at times I make her so focused on the case that I have to remember she's a person, and that as readers, you guys don't want to get to know her. So I try to give her these odd human moments at the times and take her out of case mode into I'm a person, I have problems. She's actually moving and starting up her own agency to actually make forensic mythology a thing, because it's going to be a trend. Everyone goes, that's a thing? And she's like, yes. Because it's not a thing, but she wants it to be. She's actually a certified forensic anthropologist, and she's hoping to make forensic mythology a thing, and technically she'd be the first one, because But she finds it fascinating that these myths, she finds it fascinating yet really upsetting that these myths that she spent so long studying are being turned into crimes like this. And it actually gets pretty ugly pretty fast, because while the internet doesn't have any recorded cases of someone being caught by the Midnight Man, the rumors of what happens aren't that pretty.
It seems midnight itself, I mean, the very concept is tied into a lot of urban myths and mythology. I mean, isn't there the legend of Bloody Mary that if exactly at midnight you throw a knife and, or you say your name in front of a mirror, she appears and throws a knife? I think tying that to a serial killer is pretty awesome because, I mean, well, do you also agree, MH, that midnight itself, I mean, in addition to being an actual time of the morning or the beginning of the day, is actually a concept that a lot of, I don't know, horror themes revolve around in fear?
I have to agree with you, and I feel like now I'm actually going to borrow that at some point, so when that makes a cameo in a later Petty Miss book, then you know where it came from.
Just be sure to kill a character with his name and thanks.
It is the witching hour. Midnight,
the witching hour. And I have a feeling that she's going to be like, really? Why are all these at midnight? Why can't it be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when I'm actually awake?
Crime always happens at night.
Crime always happens at night. And this is actually a prime time because it's midnight to 3:33 a.m. And actually with this first round, there's actually, you'll see the first set of murders, spoiler, there's multiple sets. But this first set, actually some of these bodies aren't discovered for days, which really throws off their timeline because the longer you go, sometimes the harder it can be to tell. You actually do have to call in a forensic anthropologist, which it might be part of the reason she got called in. Mostly it's because of her specialty with myths. They're recognizing there's something up with some of the things that are found in the crime scene.
Cool. That's a really interesting take, the myths for crime scenes. That's just pretty awesome.
Thanks.
I'm speechless, but it's just really awesome.
We have a lot of urban legends that surround, you know, strange killings, but very few of them get into the forensic aspect of it.
Yeah,
and I guess is the unique take, because at times I'm wondering, is she going too much into forensics and not enough into mythology? So that's another thing I'm struggling with a bit, is trying to maintain a balance, that there is the myth there, but, you know, she's actually solving a crime, because she actually at one point will boldly be like, this isn't, you know, the mystical Midnight Man that they summoned. No, this was an actual person who did this, and she wants to find him to, you know, bring justice to the families, because that's why she does what she does.
And I like what you said earlier about how, like, she's thinking about TiVoing while she's at a crime scene and stuff. I have been in lots of crime scenes, and you're not always just focused on the case, you know. Sometimes, especially if it becomes such a routine thing, and it is always late at night most of the time, that, you know, there's like joking around, and you know, it's like. Checking into work at any office, except you're going to where there's a dead body, but you still tend to end up having that mentality of you're just going to work. You know?
Yeah, it's fun slipping those in. There's another one later in the story where she is actually the second set of bodies is turned up, and she is reviewing the case, and all of a sudden her realtor calls, and so she switches from the case to looking at pictures and an email.
Right.
And it was like, at the same time, I'm like, would she do this? I'm like, she kind of has to. She's about to move.
That stuff happens. That stuff really happens.
Because they actually called her off of her trip to look at where she's moving to come work this case elsewhere. So
I appreciate those details because, you know, not a lot of, you know, crime scene type of stories, you know, focus on that. Hey, this cop is actually a person too, you know?
Yeah, I tried to do that with both this and Badge City. Going back to that for half a second, because Deidre's actually got 4 kids, and I actually had a couple of people give me flack for that. They're like, would a cop actually have 4 kids? I'm like, why not? She's a person. She might have wanted a big family. If I remember correctly, Deidre's actually an only child. Mm. So I've often heard only children want a big family. So now she's got 4. She's got a boy, a girl, and a set of twins. So now she's got 2 of each. So I guess, you know, she was going for 3 and surprised there was 4.
Didn't Danny Glover's character in the Lethal Weapon movies have four kids? I mean, he was a cop, right?
Good point.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything wrong with it, but I actually did have someone say something to me after the book came out about it, wondering would she be... but that's why her husband's more stay at home, because there are four kids, so she can focus on work. He does have a job, but it's more a couple hours after school and maybe occasional weekends.
They do have maternity leave. And, you know, when you're pregnant as a police officer, even you still have to do the cruiser patrol and all that stuff until a certain point, you know. So, I mean, that's pretty realistic. You know, a female cop, I don't see why she would, you know, say, no, I can't have kids ever, you know.
Yeah.
It's interesting to have a cop character that breaks conventions because
it's,
you know, the lone wolf cop, I think, is kind of a cliche if you think about it. It's nice to see a cop who's a family woman, so to speak, and I think that that's a little bit unusual, and that's good.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and spoil something a little bit. There's actually one of the victims. Deidre's actually really close with the family. It's actually a really close friend to the daughters that gets killed, and so there's actually that. You know, she's trying to separate and be like, I've got to solve this case. I've got to work. But at the same time, this is her friend. This is, you know, her daughter's friend. And it slips into being personal a little bit. And so trying to also do that balance where she's trying to stay professional, but at the same time, this is her friend. And there is a moment where she does sit there and takes a second to comfort her.
Now that we're back on Batch City, let's fulfill the title of this podcast and talk about crossovers.
Ooh.
So, do you remember the crossovers in your own book this time?
Let's see, there is the nod in the first sentence to Doctor Who. Cole Hill Park.
We could debate if this
Cole
is a crossover.
Hill. Cole Hill is a crossover.
In California.
Cole Hill, that
but
was...
This is in California instead of England, so...
No. It's all just timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hasn't the TARDIS ever materialized in California anyways? I mean, it probably has.
Yeah, but Cole Hill is a school.
It could have materialized there, too.
If Bayside High can move...
There you go.
So can Cole Hill. That's why it was written that way. There are a few. Now you are making me try to remember them all.
Yeah.
Some of them, honestly, are just I write them on a whim, and then I forget about them. And so James is like, did you mean to do this? I'm not sure, actually. Go ahead.
One of her murder suspects is a descendant of Inspector Lestrade from the Sherlock Holmes stories.
That's right, because you got me to write that in.
Yeah, you used the name. You used half the defining features of the family. So I just encouraged you. Hey, just finish what you started.
Yeah, I did it by accident. He's like, hey, did you know you were doing this? And I was like, no idea. That happens a lot, actually.
So when he's such a bad
like,
cop,
know?
The only way he can solve the crime is if he's the one committing them?
Those are the big ones I remember. There's a nod to Doctor... I feel like there's an accident... There's an accidental psych...
Dreamer.
Oh, yeah, Dreamer does get mentioned. That the same fictional universe from Doc Claus does get mentioned.
So, yes, there's no escape. There's... Following crossovers, Doc Claus infects all universes.
Because the daughter's listening to the band's music, like the latest CD. It's just a passing reference I threw in as a nod to this fictional universe that I haven't quite figured out yet. I feel like Midnight will end up getting one eventually. It hasn't worked itself in yet.
And lastly, there's also a slight crossover reference in a former case that Deidre worked, and that is a reference to one of my short stories from another Prosy collection, Rat Attack, about two luckless, useless criminals who just stumble into the plans of better criminals.
And that title was to emphasize, or I should say phonetically represent, the sound of a Tommy gun, correct?
Yes, that was the book's title. My story was Cemetery Games.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think that covers most of the crossovers in that one.
At least the ones we can remember. There's always surprises.
Let's take a moment for honesty that I very rarely actually reread my stuff. It's like... I've heard of actors that don't watch their stuff. It's the same thing for me. It makes me cringe because half the time all I see are my mistakes or what I could have done better. So I half the time will finish a project and make glance at it now and then, but I don't tend to reread my stuff.
I get it. I just listened to the first dozen episodes of this podcast because I didn't want to hear my own voice. So I totally get that. I don't like reading my own stuff. I don't like hearing my own stuff.
I'm interested in hearing MH. If you have any inspirations for Dr. Tassoni, I'm quite intrigued by that character.
I have to admit, I am too. I'm actually, to be honest, still trying to figure her out. There are times she's in my head open and honest. Yeah, this is what I think about this. This is how I'm feeling. Other times she's extremely close and we bicker back and forth. But I think she'll come in pieces, and that also benefits you guys as readers. You'll see her different scenarios. I'm kind of excited for the end. I actually have started to figure out the end of the story. Beyond the who did it, I know that. And I had the climax more or less in my head written out, but actually kind of resolving everything, I started to figure that out. And there's a fun sequence where you also get to see, I think, a little bit of a character moment.
Does her family backstory come from your love of cannoli?
Yeah, she's actually, it's because the last name's Italian. To be honest, her name came from the name generator. I actually generated 100 names. James and I sat down, we looked at them, we picked out 5 last names we liked, 5 first names we liked. We sat there and put them together for the better part of an hour, and then we finally came up with Rosella Tassani, and we're like, let's go with it. That's how her name came around. Not a very shiny story. She's not named after anyone. It was the name generator.
That's right. Usually when I come up with names for fictional characters, people ask me, where'd you come up with the name? That's just his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's Italian, so then I ran with the backstory. I'm like, I said, all right, Italian. And for some reason, I went to the cake boss because I actually got to visit the bakery up in Jersey. Best cannoli ever. James is telling me there's a place in Philly that's better, but I've said no. No, you got to go to Carlos Bakery and have a cannoli.
So, Reading Terminal, so much better.
Mm-hmm. This is a fight we have often. So her family actually is Italian, and they have a bakery in the Mideast. I haven't decided exactly where in the Midwest, but eventually I'll figure that out. Because it's going to come into play in my head later in the series, because I'm kind of mapping out, but also leaving open to what decides to come my way. So yeah, there's a little bit of her family in Midnight, because her family is not happy that she's moving, because she's been working in the bakery on top of doing these cases and becoming, you know, a well-known forensic anthropologist who's trying to make forensic mythology a thing. And her mom's not happy. Her dad support her. And she's at times a bit torn. Am I making the right choice? So it's kind of fun.
Her mom wants her back because someone's got to make the cannoli and bake the cakes.
Yeah. Free labor, after all.
So I want to make sure I could also have a chance to talk about some of your online projects in the time we have here. I've mentioned this on a previous show, but I'm a big fan of your blog. Well, your blog within a blog on 18thwall.com. You write about writing, and I found your post to be very useful. And there's actually no question there. I just want listeners to know that this exists, because I think other writers would also enjoy reading your posts.
Why, thank you.
Sure. So the other one I want to talk about, I do have questions about, is the Time Travel Nexus, which you recently brought to my attention. So do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about what the Time Travel Nexus is?
I actually do need to get back to you about that. We've been sorting out where we want to go over the next couple months and figuring things out. But the Time Travel Nexus, the goal is to eventually be a hub on the internet for all things time travel. So TV shows, podcasts, video games, comics, books, you name it, we're hoping to have it mentioned on this site eventually. That's going to be a big enterprise. Right now, I'm at times struggling to keep up with what's currently on air for TV because I've become our TV coordinator for all things time travel. So I'm catching up on currently airing shows and eventually work my way back through previously aired shows that are involving time travel.
Oh, I see. And so that's why you asked me to write something about television and time travel, so I could do your work for you.
Less work. No. I got to hand it off somehow. Plus, I also, when actually I was getting started, I thought, I was like, this would be something fun for Rob. Crossover. Right. And plus, you could get this out in your blog post. I'm cool with shameless plugging. But I'll get back with you more about that later, and hopefully we can set that up soon. But, we're doing book reviews, so if anyone out there is listening has a book coming out with time travel in it, visit our site, shoot us a message. You're probably going to want to talk to Paul. You'll see on our contact list. He's been doing a lot of our book reviews. If not, it'll end up being Joel or me that takes it over. But, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I see here written, Rob, I'm assuming this was you, saying that you're a big fan of the time travel trope.
Oh, you're reading my questions.
I am, actually.
Yeah, she broke the sacred trust of interviewer and interviewee when my back was turned.
The laptop is right in front of me. You cannot blame me.
I got to say, I have been a big fan of time travel trope since about 2263 AD. So, you know, I really am excited about a site for time travel.
Yeah, it's apparently Craig, the site's founder, met me in 1973, but I just met him about 6 weeks ago.
Right.
So, you know, that's a fun adventure to look forward to. And we're also debating which Beatles show we're going to, going across the pond. And then I said, well, let's go to one here in the States, too. You know, British Invasion. But he's like Teenage Mania, and I'm like, that's where it's at. That's actually a discussion we have had. We goof and we talk, and it's actually a lot of fun if you ever get us talking about time travel. Sometimes we'll switch tenses in the middle of a sentence, and we just have a blast doing it because we're all just a bunch of people who love time travel. It's something, I don't know if you saw on my personal blog, and that's a later question we'll get back to. I actually mentioned that on my writing bucket list is to do a novel involving time travel. So, you know, getting to write about it now in this form is a lot of fun. And maybe eventually my book will be reviewed on the site that I've been working with.
And yes, she's very jealous that in the future we will be interviewing the writers of So You Created a Wormhole.
I'm actually crashing that party. I'll be listening in just because I'm really jealous.
You know, there is a chance that we could, you know, have you come on the show for that.
As a guest host.
As a guest host.
At minimum, I'm listening in. At most, I might interject.
Well, it's been suggested to me that guest hosts who have other followings in other places are useful to us. So
there's about validity to that statement.
Yeah, and if you have, and since you actually know something about.
Speaking of that book, James, you have my copy, or is it actually at my place?
You have my copy.
This is actually a common thing between the two of us, is I have a bunch of his books, he has a bunch of my books, and then eventually figure out whose is whose.
Yeah.
So
I actually got the So You Created a Wormhole, within like 10 minutes after James told me about it. I happened to be at the mall, and so I like purchased it like right away based on his personal review to me of that book.
Yeah, I guess I have to go find that book and reread it and then give it to James so he can read it for the show.
Yep.
What probably happened is later on you went back in time to when you knew you had it and you grabbed it. And so that's probably you are the one who has it.
The flaw in that logic is that I have to remember when I last had it. And no, sometimes I have the memory of a squirrel. It's actually really bad. I'll be like, James, when is it? And he'll answer, and I'll be like, thank you.
All right.
I do his dirty work, and he sometimes remembers things for me. That's how this
sometimes.
Works. Oh, hush.
So, Chris, any final questions, comments, or puns?
Well, are we going to see more of Dr. Tassoni in the future?
Yes, actually. Do I actually get to talk about
this? Go for it.
Going for it.
Official announcement.
Official announcement. There actually is going to be a Penny Miss series. The first book hopefully will come out at the end of this year, and then our plan right now is to have two a year for as long as I feel like writing her. But yes, there will be a lot more of her, because I've actually started working on an idea for the first full-length Penny Miss story. I'm quite excited to see how I pulled this one off, because I haven't done anything quite like this before. Honestly, it's a bit of a mix between Notches and Midnight. There's just, for the lack of a better term, it's going to do a little bit of both. Things I liked about both and putting it in one book and hoping I can actually write it. But yes, the other one's not official, so we can't talk about that yet. But yes, there'll be a lot more of her. So if anyone out there has a myth, you're like, hey, Mary Helen, you should cover this. Let me know, because I'm always looking for myths for the next Petty Myth story.
So we can call you Mary Helen, but we can't call you M.
No.
Okay.
She can call her Mary Helen. That doesn't mean we can't.
Right. Good point. Good point.
Is that not wanting to be compared to James Bond's, that duty he would talk to all the time?
That's the whole point of me wanting to call her M.
I was thinking...
Okay, so James, any final questions?
Oh, dear.
Are there any embarrassing stories I'm allowed to tell?
No. There are none that you are allowed to tell.
Are there any famous people you would like to briefly mention that you've met? Because you'd like to brag.
I mean, I've met a ton, so... David Tennant, there you go. Going to plug that one. I met Tennant last year, actually about a year ago next week. So that's one of my favorite famous meet and greets was Tennant. I might have actually had to shamelessly cry on the phone to my father for the tickets, but don't regret it.
Okay, cool. And so getting down to our end, because we do have to wrap up. Are there any other projects upcoming or currently out that we didn't get to discuss that you'd like to plug?
Lemon Herberts.
Oh, yes. Lemon Herberts, because that one kind of fell through the cracks. Is actually in the 1960s, and half the reason I took on the project is so I could make a Beatles reference. Half the reason. And I think I make like three, and actually one got cut, and I was so upset. And then in the editing process, I was like, really? That's half the reason I wrote this story, was to mention the Beatles. And then I think they thought I was doing it too much. But it's a fun mystery. This actually, it kind of is almost Dreamer, so it kind of maybe helped me start to figure out how to make them work. It's a band, and they end up like Scooby-Dooing all these mysteries as they're on their world tour. So there's, I think, a collection of six stories, and one's in London. Mine's in Sydney, Australia. We go around the world, and it's a lot of fun just writing Australia in the 60s and with a band.
And I will mention that the complete collection has been nominated for a Pulp Factory Award, which I'm not even sure if she was aware of.
Yeah, you sent it to me on Facebook the other day.
And the collection itself has crossovers with the Phantom of the Opera and the Cthulhu Mythos.
And I'm surprised. I had meant to ask you about that project, and I did not have it in my questions. So I'm glad James prompted you.
Yeah, and then there's one more. I actually can't talk much more about it, except I can say there's actually a 1930s... what do you want to call that one, the 1930s?
I would just say it's a B mystery.
He's going to say it's a B mystery, and that's all I can actually say about that right now. I actually asked the editor of the project, and that's all they said I can say. But that hopefully will come out at some point this year, and it's definitely different than things I've usually done. But I kind of did it as to see if I could do it, have fun. It was a good story and a chance to get my name out there. So.
And it involves Shirley Temple.
I kept making so many Shirley Temple references.
All right. I'm
sold. That's why I take on stories. That's why I take on historic stories, is so I can mention various famous people. No, not really. There's one I hope to do eventually. I will be doing it half to mention that. Never mind. But that is half the fun, is being able to anchor it with real life people.
All right. And finally, how can our listeners follow you on social media?
Well, you can go to any of 18th Wall's social media, because I'm there once a week with If Walls Could Talk, since I'll plug my own blog again. You also can follow me on Twitter at MHNorse4, and I also have a Facebook page, MHNorse, which I'm hoping to get better about updating, and my website, MHNorse.wordpress.com.
Awesome. Okay. So thanks for being with us.
And, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and I'm serious about coming back on with the time travel guide, guys.
Thank you for a cool character, MH.
I'd say we're going to let you go, but I think you're probably going to hang out anyways.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to commercial, and when we come back, we'll be wrapping
up. Yeah, we're stuck with her.
All right.
And me.
Thanks, MH.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back. And that is all the time we've got for today. Join us next week when we'll be talking with Jess Thomas Cook, the director of Monster Brawl. This will be our second filmmaker to be on our show, and I'm really excited for that. Before we end, I want to thank our sponsor, the Z Phone. Again, not Apple. The top choice in communication technology for those other teens of the Disney persuasion, which would include Hannah Montana and the Jonas Brothers. And a special thanks to Tiny White and the Deadites for our show's theme music. Thanks to all who listened. Remember to subscribe to and rate our shows on iTunes. And as always, everything happens somewhere.